Just an apology, an apology from the minister. Who's still abroad? Who's still helping with the preparation for the call? And, we also received an apology from the deputy minister, who's also still busy engaged in the. Party work. But those are the only apologies that we have. See, Honorable Khadel is not here. It's on his way. Okay, sure. All right. So we are going to hand over to yourself, DG. Just to introduce your team and explain to us what's going to happen.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. We have a number of items on the agenda, but we're starting with the Working on Fire item. We do have here the management of the department that deals with the Working on Fire program oversight and the Kishugu, which is the company or the organization that is executing the implementation of the program. So I would like to then allow them to introduce the team, and then the DR team, you already know, the DGG responsible, Dr. Preston, and next to me we also have Christo Marais, who's normally not in this committee, but she's also from the Nweba, where are you? And Nweba, she's also from the department, but responsible for the Working on Fire program. So I'd like to hand over to you, the CEO, Johan, over to you.
Thank you, DG, and good morning, honourable members and Chair. I'd just like to introduce the team from Working on Fire Kashugu. We've got Joseph Magagula, board member from Working on Fire and safety executive, Linton Barensberg, communication for Working on Fire, on the right there. Luther Carter, Working on Fire board member of the board, and also
who are the people I introduced?
Okay, Joseph, just put your hand up. Joseph and Linton on the right there, sorry. Luthia, Carter, board member of Working on Fire and executive for the communications. She's responsible for all the Working on Fire communications that we see going out on a regular basis. Goodness Lubisi, she's a board member for Working on Fire, as well as the executive for finance, one of the finance executives, and also trustee for the Employers Trust. So she's also a trustee on the Nick Elliott on my right, board member for Kashugu, and then on my left we've got Trevor Abrams, board member Kashugu, board member Working on Fire, and he was also a former managing director of Working on Fire, and as presently responsible on the board as the executive for government relations and communications. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much. Okay. So that's the rest of the team from Working on Fire.
Yes. Chair, we then propose that the presentation starts with the presentation from the department that would outline where the company fits in and how the model was arrived at. The COO will take us through the presentation, and then thereafter we hand over to Mr. Abrams.
All right, so
Good morning, Chair, and morning, honourable members. As DG has indicated, I will just give a brief background to the rationale for the Working on Fire program, then talk to the process of awarding the contract, some of the key deliverables and the governance mechanisms around the program, and then just a brief highlight on the key achievements, but in terms of the full performance of the program, I will then leave that to the team to then go into that. Okay. Firstly, the program was necessitated by a lack of a coherent approach to wildfire management. Wildfire management was at that time done under the Working for Water program. Amongst others, this program focused on clearing alien invasives. And what we had realized was that invasive species greatly exacerbated wildfires, and hence then the program was done under that, that broad program at that time. Just to give an illustration of an incident that we had around that time, there is on the where we lost four workers from the Working for Water program. What had actually happened is these workers, there was a wildfire at that time. And however, because of invasions in the area, there was very little water for these people to get cover. They tried to run into the stream, but they were then greatly injured in that process. So basically, what we then looked at is Working on Fire is not just a disaster management process, but it's also critical, is a critical component in ecosystem management. So in that process, when we were still working under the Working for Water, we then developed the National Veld and Forest Fire Act in 1998, and also we used the experience of the forestry industry, which at that time only focused on plantation risks, and all these programs were then critical elements in the development of the professional Working on Fire program. The program was then implemented under the Expanded Public Works program with the key objectives of poverty relief, skills development, and provision of social services. From the time of inception, the beneficiaries of the program grew from 850 to over 5,000, and they are located at 200 bases in all 9 provinces. So we do have a footprint in all the provinces that we have. The inception date for the program was in September 2003, but at that time it was implemented in the Department of the then Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, which is now Water Affairs and Sanitation, and this happened until March 2011. In April 2011, it was post the macro reorganization of the state. The program was then transferred to the Department of Environmental Affairs, and it was transferred as part of the National Resource Management Program, which we have now in the program under the EP branch, as DG was saying, where the responsibility for the program lies. Now, in terms of the contract now for Working on Fire, we wanted to explore a public-private partnership mechanism in terms of implementing this, but we then discovered with engagements with Treasury that the program did not meet the PPP requirements. And as a result, we then did an expression of interest where we then went on an open tender to try and invite implementers on this. But what we also realized was we need to be careful, because we needed to ensure that we had a sustainable program. And as part of having a sustainable program, we then went through a process of doing a need analysis, which basically gave us the rationale for the tender processes. And we then, in that process, that's where we said the veld or in forest fire management is primarily the responsibility of land users. So it is important that whoever is the implementer has partnerships with land users in this regard. And also, we realize that if we are to implement this successfully, there is a need for sophisticated equipment such as aerial support and specialized transport. And we needed to then rationalize and see whether there would be value for money if we were to then try and get, the government was to get the equipment itself or to try and partner with the private party in this regard. So it was then decided that it would be better for us, and it would then transfer the operational risks if we then looked at getting an implementing agencies who would then have this equipment, the sophisticated equipment that I talked to, in their own books as opposed to having them in the departmental books. But the intent from the onset was to then transition to a public entity arrangement. So that was the rationale. And because of that, we then found that having a three-year contract would not give us the value for money, and therefore Treasury also agreed to us considering a seven-year contract, but with a clear exit strategy at the end of that seven-year period. I will go into details on that strategy and the elements of it at a later stage, Chair. There was also a feasibility study that we had done, which looked at the costing for the program, what were the options for procurement, operating and maintenance of the assets. I've talked briefly about the value for money of implementing a longer-term product that we needed to look at. And I've already said that the main consideration for us was to transfer both the technical and operational risks to the implementing agency. Then in terms of the proposals that we received, we had four bids that we received from four different companies: Resotech Africa Import Export, Western Cape Emergency Services, Super Group Fire Services, the Forest Fire Association, which is now known as Kishuku. We went through the process of evaluating all the bids. Key elements in that was to look at the functional structure that the bidders were proposing, the ratios of allocation of resources for different functions, and also the geographical placement of resources, because we need to ensure that we have coverage in all nine provinces. We also needed to consider the budget, what was the budget structure that they were proposing, and does the bidder have the management command system? Are they giving us a realistic budget? And this we were basing on the fact that, as you realize, members, I had said that the inception date for the program was 2003, so we had a bit of a sense of what would be realistic costing or budget for this, and we had already done our own costing internally, so we needed to assess whether the bidders were giving us a realistic budget, as we wanted to avoid the risk of someone coming either too low and then at a later stage wants us to amend, or somebody also being too high. So there was a bit of that. That's why we did the upfront costing ourselves. Then also, would they have appropriate human resources for specific functions that we needed? In terms of the technical expertise and deployment thereof, we needed to ensure that the department, working with the Department of Agriculture and Forestry, or DAF at that time, agreed that there will be an establishment of FPAs, which is the Fire Protection Associations, that would then support. The implementing agency was to take responsibility for advocacy and awareness in creating support to other key players in the industry in integrated veld and forest fire management. They needed to play a leading role in the detection, dispatch, and coordination. This means they need to strategically plan, coordinate, and dispatch firefighting resources. So those would be part of what we needed to ensure that they had expertise in those areas. In terms of their ground operations, which is basically the key deliverables that we wanted, it was around fire protection and prevention, fire suppression, and also managing fires, which is around prescribed burning for ecological purposes, fleet management, we talked about the equipment that they needed, capacity building, and also a key element for us was around transformation. How are they managing their procurement and supply of aerial support, setting up of management of incident and command systems. So those were the key deliverables that we wanted. We needed to ensure that the bidder has an understanding of EPWP projects and how it works, and they have had exposure and they have had experience in implementing EPWP projects, as this was implemented as part of an EPWP project. One of the key areas that the implementing agent needed to look at was unlocking the private sector opportunities or other resources, and this they were to do through proposals on revenue generations and looking at reasonableness of the partnerships and proposals, but also they would need to give us proposals around use of membership fees for the FPAs, and also give us a proposal on insurance companies. We then reviewed also the track record of the bidding entity, and the following were considered in that: what were their previous contracts that they had had, what was the size of the business, the geographical spread, and we also reviewed the references that they had, and we needed to ensure that they do have expertise in logistical management. At the end of the process, the contract was then awarded to FFA Operations. As I've indicated, they were then known; they are now known as Kishugu, which is why DG introduced them as Kishugu. But the intention was that, if you would recall, I said earlier that with our agreement with Treasury, we always wanted to look at a transitional system where we would look at the end of the 7-year contract that we have, the assets would then revert to the Department of Environmental Affairs, and then we would would look at the institutional future institutional arrangements for that. The department has governance mechanisms with all our entities, so while the implementing agency would not be a public entity at the moment, we try to implement similar governance mechanisms, which I will talk to when we get to the governance section. But basically what I wanted to reflect at this time is that we also ensure that we do have oversight committees that are still answerable to the department, so that the department is able to play an oversight role on the implementing agent. The key features of the contract was to ensure that the implementing agent was entitled to a maximum of 9% in terms of management fees per annum. I've indicated that one of the key deliverables was to unlock third-party resources, and this was then incentivized in the contract in that they would earn also a further 9.6% implementing fee on additional revenue that they generate. So this was just as a way of incentivizing them to then ensure that they do unlock the third-party resources. In a nutshell, in the contract then, what we were saying is the responsibility of Kishugu or FFA Holdings at that time in the contract was basically around the strategic management services. So it is a holding company which has a few subsidiary companies, but in terms of the Working on Fire program, their responsibility is to then ensure that they provide strategic direction, they provide management services, finance, legal, and human resources services. As part of that contract, there were related parties that we had, which then means we were trying to manage and ensure that these are some of the services that they will not further outsource. That's what that clause means. And these services included the aviation, training, fleet management, textile, personal protective equipment, and providing services to the Working on Fire program as a whole. So these they could, we were then saying, managing and ensuring that there isn't further outsourcing, or if there is a need to further outsource, that the department has sight of the processes followed, and then we can ensure that there is proper governance in that as well. I previously talked to the exit strategy. Now, as I outlined in the contract, this was to happen after 5 years. We have now been implementing this for 2 years, so we still have five years to go. In this 5 years, there have already been engagement that has commenced with Treasury and the department around the future institutional arrangements of the unit or the program, let me say. And one of the key elements was then to say the staff employed by the Working on Fire, the assets, as I said, or the capital equipment and intellectual property would then be transferred to the new institutional arrangement, whichever one it is. So it's sort of an investment also for government to ensure that we are able to then to have these assets in the long term. But that nature of this new institutional arrangement, as I've said, is still being discussed and will be finalized in the next 5-year period. On governance, I previously talked to the fact that we still manage it like we're managing our other entities, which we have a governance protocol in place. And amongst others, the key elements of this governance protocol is to ensure that there is quarterly reporting, the plans of the program, as well as the budget gets approved by the department. They do then produce quarterly reports which get analyzed by the department and feedback therefore. So there is that continuous or quarterly monitoring of their performance. We have established two boards. There is the NRM Exco Committee, which acts advised by the Oversight Committee, and their responsibility in the main is to ensure compliance with the provisions of the contract, to approve the annual plan of operations, the budget, and if there are any variations to the contract, we need to also manage these to monitor progress in terms of the plans that we have, and to consider any matter relevant to implementation of the Working on Fire program. So we do have that governance role and oversight over the program. There is an element, though, Chair and members, in terms of governance issues in which we're still lacking a bit, and it's around managing international travel of the program. But the matter is urgently being looked into. As I've indicated, the engagements around the future institutional arrangements of the program have already commenced in June this year, and we are looking at future location being either at the Department of Environmental Affairs, DAF, DPE, and Water and Sanitation. So those are the considerations at the moment in terms of where the program would be implemented. Chair, as I indicated, I'm not going to go into details about the performance of the program. I would leave that to the team. But in a nutshell, when we looked at their 2015-16 annual report, their expenditure was at 100%, which was 1.092 billion. They had created 12.48 full-time equivalents, with an average number of work opportunities at 5,087. They had managed to fight 5,428 fires, and the estimated area of fires attended to was about 2.3 million hectares, with a total person training days of 121,076,000. I'm reflecting on these, Chair, because as indicated, this program is implemented as part of EPWP, so we need to track the job opportunities and the training opportunities that are created in the program. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
What is the advance is coming to continue the presentation? I think the key summary is that this is not a permanent arrangement. It's a model that the department arrived at following the transfer of the program from water, the then Department of Water, Water Affairs, it's Water and Forestry, it used to be DWAF, Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, to the Department of Environmental Affairs. And it followed some logical process from the feasibility of where the function could lie. In terms of the Biodiversity Act, we did not have provisions to set up an entity as yet, which is one of those issues that the minister is actually considering. So we had a discussion actually now already in June, and the minister was still going to make the decision about what is the best future. in light of the fact that the government, the president, had the state-owned entity review, and in those recommendations, one of the recommendations was that we should not be setting up new entities. We rather rationalize what is existing, which is why we are looking at, when we say public enterprises, we're looking at Safcol, whether there are opportunities to align there. We're looking at COPTA, whether we could align with the new institutional arrangements in respect of the public entity under COPTA. So the minister will still have to come back to the committee on the future in respect of the integration of the function within the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I didn't get the governance arrangements properly. Can I just elaborate just on that?
Chair, what the governance is a protocol that we have with entities in general, but because this is not a government entity, it's a private entity, as you may appreciate. We have a departmental representative that serves in the committee, like we have with our public entities. We have a DDG that participates in those forums. So in this case, we have two officials, Dr. Christo Maray and So they are the two officials of the department that then participate in different committees of the Working for Water, Working for Fire program. Basically because this is a program that we transfer quite a significant amount of money per annum, and there are also requirements for detailed planning, so that when we approve budgets and before the minister tables the budgets here, we also reflect what is going to be allocated to the Working Fire, which is what we then report against in terms of our targets, both on expenditure and on output. So that is the current framework, but it's not a legislated arrangement. That's what I'm trying to underscore, Chair. Thanks.
So that is the NRM Exco.
It's the Natural Resources Management Committee, which is the Exco of Westmont Fire, taking it from the fact that this is part of the stable of the Natural Resource Management Program. We have the Working for Water, which is related to control of invasive species, and the fire being one of the major issues and aspects in that regard.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, DJ. Mr. Fox, are you ready?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Committee members. I'm going to give a brief presentation, one just on the implementing agenda. You've heard names like FFA and Kishu to talk a bit about that. Talk a bit just about the structure of the program, and then conclude with a bit about overseas deployment. In terms of the implementing agency, as has been noted already, the contract was awarded to FFA Operations, which is part of the FFA group of companies. That name FFA actually comes from a group of people that formed in Mpumalanga, Forest Fires Association, with the forestry companies, different individuals who were in a non-profit company originally. So that's where the origins of FFA come from. We went through a name change primarily as a result of us being involved in a number of activities which was not forest fire per se. And we chose the name Kishubu, and FFA became the Kishubu group of companies with the strapline of for the greater good. And this comes from the Kiswahili term anthill. So trying to convey a sense of small people working together, we can build something big. And that's been the history of the Working Fire's growth over the years. Similarly, with FFA Operations, in particular subsidiary, we renamed that Working on Fire Pty Limited. And that was because we had some problems with suppliers. We rent a building. We say we're renting an office for Working Fire. But when we came to sign in, we had to sign FFA Operations. So you can imagine now people start looking at us, you know, what's actually going on here? You know, it's a private company hiding behind a program. So we streamlined it so we could actually deal with our supplier contractual considerations as well as the transfer that's anticipated going back to DEA. It will be coherent. It's a Working on Fire program housed in an entity called Working on Fire Pty Limited. In terms of the governance, just to go back to our holdings board, you'll see that we have a fairly experienced group of people who serve as our board members, in fact, chaired by a former head of our National Disaster Management Unit. We've got academics, business people, forest ecologists, a fire ecologist, myself being a background in aviation and management, as well as a businessman. So we brought together quite a formidable team to ensure governance within the Kishugu Group, in terms of the Companies Act, with all the necessary statutory committees that we have to have there. In terms of the contract, we listed here, there's a number of roles, and I think the CFO has actually touched on the kind of strategic direction that we intended to direct this. And I just want to stop on the risk. It's Kishugu company which actually holds a risk of spread insurance. This is a rather unique insurance. They don't give it out easily because when people start fires, they often do run away, and we as Kishugu Group hold such a insurance that it's obviously very risky business, firefighting, so you know we are responsible for directing a safety management system. We also help the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries with the implementation of National Felt and Forest Fire Act. So those are some of the things which a contract actually identified that the Kishugu Group should lend to the Working on Fire program as such. The Working on Fire P2O Limited is a company in its own right, wholly owned subsidiary. So it has a board chaired by Johannes, you've heard early on, and with the list of people that we have there in terms of playing the direction. We also have two members from DEA serving on this particular board, as has been indicated by our CFO. In terms of the shareholding structure in Kishugu, you will notice that there's a number of shareholders. We have a 30.1% BE shareholding. I think of note is that all previously disadvantaged employees who have been more than 5 years with the company are part of a BE employee share trust, and we've heard earlier on that Goodness and Joseph are trustees of that particular shareholding, 17%. All these shareholdings are fully paid up. There's no debt behind it. They've actually been paid dividends. In the case of the employees, they've been paid more than 400,000 out in dividends where we've actually made money. We're not a hugely profitable company, but when we do have some profit, we've actually paid it out. You'll see at the bottom a range of companies that we hold interest in. Most of them are 100% or 51% that we have. Some of them are related to the Working Fire programs, others not. We also have operations that we have currently interest in Chile, Argentina, Brazil, Australia. So, you know, the fire IP, the intellectual knowledge of that we've accumulated, is something we've been able to export. We actually hosted the World Fire Congress here in 2011. And as a result of that, which I'll come to the Canadian deployment arose, where people saw how we do our work here. So I think we are proudly South African initiative, right? Something that's been recognized on the international scale at that time. Mr. Johan Heine also serves on the International Aviation Firefighting Working Group of FAO. So again, you know, our expertise is recognized quite broadly. In terms of our BE, economic certification, we are certified on an annual basis. We are level 2 contributor, and in terms of procurement recognition, at 125%. You'll see from the certificate, black ownership is cited at 30.19%, black women ownership 4.69%. So this is something we obviously do on an annual basis,
The Working on Fire program was launched in 2003. And today employs more than 5,000 young men and women who have been fully trained as felt forest firefighters and who are deployed at more than 200 bases across South Africa. More than 90% of the firefighters are between 18 and 35 years of age. 30% are women, the highest percentage of women in any similar firefighting force in the world. The Working on Fire program practices integrated fire management to prevent and control wildland fires and has
So, Chairman, I just thought we'd just have a brief visual input there. You know, I think the pictures tell much more powerful stories than I could even say here. And then if I could just bring us to some key statistics from the program. You've heard quite a bit, but I'll try and go through it quite quickly. I think one of the issues, we'd just like to give you some key target areas of the last 3 years. What we have here is a number of indices. These are not the only indices we are measured on. The first row across will give you the target. The second in bold is the actual. And then the next line, either in blue or red, gives you our performance as a percentage of our target. You will see, of course, in 2013-14, there were a few cases where we missed that target, marginally, I would say. In the other years, we've exceeded it. And these are key indicators that the EPWP program measures us on. In other words, person days, we are employing people. Our employee targets, obviously, the cost per person day, also our health and safety, disabling injury frequency rate. It's set at 3 as a target. We, you know, repeatedly score below that, which is where you want to be, below the 3. And also social development workshop. There are many other statistics that we do. I'm just giving this as a picture. Part of our success in exceeding our target is that we're able to unlock third-party resources, which allows us to go above what budget would normally allow us to target. In terms of historical employment, at the end of the day, EPW wants to see full-time equivalent. In other words, the number of 230 days that anyone is employed, and you'll see we're now at the plus more than 6,000 per annum mark in that way. In terms of fires, we cannot predict fires, although, you know, with the climate changes that we are seeing happening now, every prediction is that the risk is going to be much higher. This just gives a sense of the hectares that are burnt. And, you know, if you look from 2012 through to 2015-16, it's a rough flattening out, and I think the impact of the Working on Fire program has clearly been able to limit the amount of damage. These are the number of fires we get called out to over those years to assist with. And then I think for the provinces, you can see actually at the provincial level, just this year, year to date, up till September, these are the number of teams that go out in the fires. If you look at Western Cape 37, Eastern Cape 59, KwaZulu 65, Free State 31. The number of fires they attend, and also the burnt area as a result of it. So it's, in terms of its social service, there's absolutely no question about the impact of this program. In terms of demography, we obviously target the unemployed youth, and it's not surprising that you see the kind of statistics that 91% is African, 9% colored. We also have a 2% requirement for disability. We had 3%. Because we also have some administrative roles, so our disability, people with disabilities are able to play the role. I think one of the proud statistics of this program is that we've got, repeatedly, we've bumped 30% in terms of female firefighters. This is our largest in any civil firefighting service in the world. In terms of the age group, we're obviously targeting youth. More than 90% are under age 35. Obviously, when we talk a bit about our firefighters becoming managers, you'll see some of them are starting to approach the 35-year age, and that segment might grow a bit. Part of the program is a very heavy emphasis on training. Firefighting is dangerous. People need to be trained properly. Every year they are assessed to get their yellow card. They're not allowed to go to the fire if they not have a current yellow card. So you'll see part of the program budget is a considerable amount of training, much of it at our academy, the green bar. And then some of it is done off-site away from the academy. So it's a very heavy training element in this program. One of the areas that we have tremendous risk is actually road transport, when people travel. And these are the kilometers that we travel over time. And of course, you'll see it spike depending on the fire season. And we've installed a dash cam monitoring system where we're able to pick up any exceedance of speed, braking, different, you know, dangerous driving. And we've brought the number of incidents down quite significantly. You'll see, even notwithstanding the spike, the increase is not what. And this is continually being rolled out, and we really believe we've done a major turnaround in driver behavior, and we target particular areas that they can improve. Our major accomplishment of the program really is the integrated fire management we have. It's not just about suppressing. Everybody sees firefighters putting out fires.
We actually educate our communities, and I'll talk a bit more. We do prevention. We burn blocks before the fire season. We have cameras that detect it. We dispatch and coordinate. We do the suppression. We also have some research and rehabilitation capacity. I think the intangible one is the social impact, restoring dignity amongst our firefighters. Anyone who's met with them, seen them walking back in the communities in their uniforms will know. As I've really highlighted, we're very proud of our female-to-male ratio. But one of the things our impact studies have indicated is that for many of our firefighters, they report, I can now send my children to preschool. I can now start providing better schooling for them. And we believe this is an important step in breaking out of the cycle of poverty amongst these. We also developed our firefighters as of today, other than what the video said, we're now at 297 of our 375 managers are former firefighters. So we do invest quite a bit in terms of bringing them up. And of course, we also place many of our firefighters in formal jobs in the formal economy, some of them in the police service, some of them in defense, some of them in the nature conservation agencies, municipal services. We place them in quite a few places because they've learned the skills of actually doing jobs and are able to apply and take up things. This is not intended to be a permanent employment. This is really an EPWP program to bring poverty relief and hopefully assist them in getting jobs in the formal economy. We train our firefighters to do fire awareness. So this year, for example, we've had 463 workshops where we train them. And over the period from 2011 to 2016, we've actually reached 1.8 million people with fire awareness activities. In this year, we've visited 833 schools so far. That's a six-month mark, impacting on 80,000 learners. We've also had 5,391 educators as part of that process. We've reached out to 886 communities with our fire awareness work, where we've reached to 47,407 people. So it's not just a matter of putting out fires. We also do the important educative work. Obviously, this type of work gets quite a bit of coverage in the media. We have something we have with the prisons to rehabilitate ex-offenders, and these get covered in many of our newspapers as and particularly just prior to the fire season. In South Africa, there are two fire seasons. The summer part, which starts normally around December, is essentially the southern Western Cape year, going off to the Southern Cape. But most of the rest of the country, the fire season is in winter. So, you know, that's why you have reference to the fire season. We've got quite an elaborate media department. We have newsletters that we put out, and, you know, at the end of this, we'll give you copies for all our honorable members to have a look at. The coverage that we've had in our media thus far this year is upwards of a value of 37 million. We distribute, obviously, to stakeholders. We have a WAF TV channel because we found that many of our firefighters are not so adept at reading. They prefer to see visual things. So we produce two TV shows per month. And if you go to YouTube and you look at WAF TV news, you'll see all
the 37 million is just the spend.
No, that's you calculate the coverage in terms of, you know, the footage there, and if it's positive, that's a value. You're getting free advertisement if you like. Yeah, no spend of that money. Obviously, we use the social medias like Facebook, the Twitter, and also our website, as is common nowadays. We do participate in a number of government events, particularly DEA, with our deputy president. We are a regular part of the Arbor Day with DEF, and of the National Days, World Environment Day, Youth Day, Nelson Mandela Day, International Firefighters Day, Heritage Month, and World Rangers Day, as well as Women's Month. I think the additional impact, as I said, is something that's evolving now, particularly our dramatic improvement in driver safety by virtue of the kind of monitoring system we have. But we've also provided support in other disaster management services, such as the oil spill in Southern Cape, with cleaning up on the beach, the tornado recovery in the Free State when there was the tornado disaster, I think that 3 years ago, flooding in Mpumalanga. So we often are called in to play a role with disaster management as well. Just in terms of infrastructure, obviously this is quite a large organization where we have our board, and as the CFO has referred, there are two governance structures, that is the NRM that we account to. We have a managing director and quite a large structure of national departments which serves the organization. But the operational presence of the organization is in the province. So in every 9 of our provinces, we have a full-on general manager with a team and the firefighters, on average about 600 per province at this point in time. The only one that is not as dense is actually Northern Cape, because it's mostly around the Orange River area where we have a fire danger, Batebasat and those areas where they are part of the Free State because of the small number of teams. I think if we look at this particular overview of the management structure, these are our female managers. We just recently appointed 2 general managers, women general managers, at Black African in Northwest and KwaZulu-Natal, but clearly it's an area that we need to improve. We are certainly venturing into a previously male-dominated environment, and this is an area that we do need to improve. If we look at the demography of our management, this is the breakdown when we look at executive, senior, middle, junior, and our trainees. And obviously you see, if you look back down to trainees, the pipeline, the kind of representation of PDIs are much more stronger. In terms of our job profile, I think this is quite interesting. Of the 5,270 in the program, 7.8% is management, so it's a very small management cadre relative to the large number of participants in this program, and it's quite challenging because they spread across the country in 200 bases, and it does require quite an extensive management effort to deal with it. If I may just speak to the overseas deployment, you may have seen pictures like this when our team of 301 went off to Canada in May last year. I think it's very important that we understand the overseas employment. Disaster relief, you know, like the tsunami or when you have earthquakes, etc., when people go to help, they don't get employed there. They get sent by the sending country. They're employed by the sending country, and you don't get equated. You're not being sent to work. It's really disaster relief, as was the fires at Fort McMurray in May and June. It was a disaster. They were being overstretched in terms of their capacity. So the WAF personnel remain in the employ of the sending country ourselves. They also, as is often the case, even when civil servants go abroad, they get an S&T. They still get their salary. You get an overseas allowance, which is not based on wage rates in whatever country you find. So in the case of Fort McMurray, you had people from Mexico, you had Americans, you had Australians. All of them would be paid in terms of their domestic wages. In the last deployment to Canada, both of them, the WAF allowance was about Canadian $50 a day, which is approximately 600 rand at the prevailing exchange rate, over and above their local salary. Now, this was paid to what SARS permits as a tax-free allowance to be earned abroad, minus, of course, accommodation, food, which they were provided. So they are emergency relief workers. They're not employed in those countries. In fact, the Canadian visa that was issued was very explicit that it's a VX1. You're not to be integrated into the Canadian labor market. We've had 3 major deployments recently. We, as you saw in the video in 2015, 50 of our firefighters with 3 incident management team managers went for 30 days. In November 2015, another 50 plus 3 of our pilots and 3 management went for 3 weeks or 21 days. And then in May, for 20 days, we had deployed 294 firefighters and 7 incident management team to that place. Now, I think lots of issues were raised in terms of what had happened there. I think we need to clarify that for the WAF personnel, all their board and lodging was paid for in Canada. The overseas allowance was actually intended to be spent locally on return. And when we actually compare their earnings in terms of their purchase power, they actually earn more than their Canadian counterparts. And this is a table which...
just like as a comparison. The yellow over there is what they actually earned in South African rand. The little green thing is what they would typically earn on the EPWP program. The red bar is what the Canadians earn in nominal values in rand, 38,000. But when we apply the cost of living index, and this is a prevailing economic indicator, you find they actually are earning less in purchase power compared to what the South Africans actually earn for their stay for 20 days. Any surpluses that we earn from a deployment, because obviously when you put together a budget with an agency that says we need firefighters, you cannot be precise. We don't know the extent of the fire, how the operation will work. So we budget, we have some contingencies. Any surplus that is over what was paid goes back into the program. And these are the amounts that were paid for the different deployments. In the case of Canada, 1.7, Indonesia, 567, and the second Canada, we're estimating 1.2 million. The implementing agent for unlocking third person is limited by 9.6%. These are the amounts in the latest Canada one. We've only actually budgeted for 7% management fee. We provided an audit report on these expenditures to the department so that, you know, there can be verification, and these figures are contained in the presentation. And we trust that this will give your committee some insight to how the operation works. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We will invite for questions from the members, but from my side, I'm a bit disappointed that you give us almost like a 3-page explanation of the Canadian experience, which I would have expected that you were going to give us a detailed report from the beginning to the end, including the financials. So I see you only include the financials. But how the program unfolded from the request to get assistance and how that assistance was put into place and how the deployment was done and the issues that emerged during the deployment and how they were tackled, those issues, and what was finally the result. What are the lessons that we've learned out of that experience, and what is it that we're going to do going forward to improve the situation if there are any further requests for deployment for assistance? That is what I had expected to get from the report, because this deployment, as you know, that even ourselves here at the college, we had to issue a statement at some point when we were confronted with issues in the media that required us to comment. And we said that we're concerned because this thing is not good for the country. Remember what happened there in Canada. It's not something that we can be proud of. We sent in more than 300 firefighters. When they arrived there, they were in a jubilant mood, and then 3 days down the line they were refusing to do what they were there to do, and that thing got a serious media coverage, which sort of impacted on our standing, because the narrative that was emerging out of that was that we are not treating our workers properly. We are paying them less than what other people are getting paid. So that's the narrative that was getting out of the deployment, and we were not able to handle it properly. So I was expecting that when you come here, you were going to tell us more about that. But instead, you give us a 3 pages with some graphs and stuff, which is not very impressive from where I'm sitting. So I would like to engage more on the Canadian experience based on a full report of what happened. But we appreciate the report, but it would not be really acceptable that when we experience such a thing, you come to the committee and then you give the committee 4-page explanation with the financials. Nothing on the problems encountered, going forward, what is going to be, because Canada, you know, is prone to failed fires. They may experience one this year or next year around May, June. They may require another assistance. What will be the plan going forward? Are we going to have the same thing again? I mean, those are the things that I'm saying we expect to get, to say we have learned the lessons. These are some of the issues that we're confronted with. This is how we're going to then improve going forward. I don't know whether I'm being understood. But I've got a couple of questions, but for now, let me allow the members to come in and then take it from there. Honorable Nyami, Honorable Edwards, Honorable Mabilu, and the Wisdom.
Thanks, Chairperson. One has to start by welcoming the presentation. My first comment, Chair, is on the board of directors of Kishu. I just see one lady there, of which we need to make more, because we need more women to be empowered. The other one is on page 7. I just want to know why Northern Cape is not part of the working activities or to be part of the teams that way to make attempts on the fire attendant meters. The last one, Chair, what will become of the current firefighting crew if Kishu contract is not renewed? Will they become unemployed? Will they be, or they will be absorbed by the Department of Environment? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Edward.
Thank you, Jay. You've spoken a lot about the Canada issue. Can I elaborate on it a bit?
You can elaborate, but I'm expecting that we might have to come back and touch on that.
No, I agree.
Okay.
I fully agree with you. I just want to say that, it's been coming a while. First of all, I think it's a little bit disappointing that we only get it a year later for the report or a presentation. It turned out to be, on social media specifically, it turned out to be an international disaster. I mean, people were siding with the Working on Fire guys. I mean, just for example, one of the things that really, and I get what you say, that you, and you said it in your presentation now specifically, but I'm pretty, I don't know, I think I'm pretty offended, because in the province of Alberta, in Canada, the minimum wage is $11.20. I get that it's not supposed to be, but our guys only got $4 per hour. They work long hours and they get $4 an hour. I get that they stay for free, and I get that they got all sorts of stuff. It's fine, but I think quite frankly it's disgusting. There was enough money given. What I would like to know, specifically when the report then comes, is that what happened to the money that was allocated to each person, which then by South Africa was minimalized, if I can put it that way. I think another slap in our face was that the Premier of the province of Alberta was sympathizing with our workers. And she had a pretty good couple of things to say, and nothing was good for South Africa. So what I would like to know is that, first of all, this is an experience of a lifetime for our guys. How would you go about strengthening the relations again, especially seeing that we didn't decide to get our guys back. Canada asked us this. I mean, that's pretty embarrassing. And then secondly, I would like to know,
you want us to engage with it now, or when the report comes?
Well, they can give the answers when the report comes. I just want specifics out of it. Because there were allegations made in the media that Working on Fire didn't respond to specifically. They did bring up media statements, but there were a lot of things that they didn't address.
Yeah, because I was thinking that's why I was saying I was a bit disappointed in the four-page explanation, because I was expecting that you will ask questions, and we don't have a report on that, you see. Because it's always better when we engage and the report is in front of us, because quite clearly it's a matter of public interest, and the committee members will want to engage on that. And it's only fair that these details, reasons and explanations given in the form of a report, so that we're able then when we engage to say, you say this on this, but what about this? You see?
Okay.
Do you agree with my approach? Yes. Because I think it's something that we really need. We deserve, the committee deserves then to get a report and then to interact on it.
Can I just ask something, Jane, specifically?
Okay.
As to the surpluses. There were money left. They need to explain a detailed breakdown of every single thing.
Okay. Honorable Mokoyen. Oh, did you want her to come?
Yes.
Kekan? Oh, yeah, it was Babil.
No. Let me start with the question that was posed by my colleague around the question that I was also going to pose in terms of the footprint and your mind. Because geographically, the Northern Cape is the largest province in the country. So we are not talking about population, but we are talking about the geography. And any fire disaster can take place anywhere. For example, if it takes place in Amapo, which is next to Namibia, how are you going to respond? So that question for me is very fundamental. Now, let me first pose one or two questions to the department and then to yourself. On page one, in terms of the working for water, so, the DG state explaining the historical background in terms of how the water program was conceived and tended to be working with fire. But the question would be to say, we know that working for water is considered a success story worldwide, and it is currently residing within the Department of Environmental Affairs. And obviously we understand that this program is correctly run. So my question to the department is that, what lessons have you learned from working for water that you enable you to run working on fire successfully as a department? This is a question to the department. I'll come to it. to yourself. And the second one is that it's around the institutional arrangement. I understand that DG is saying that they're still working on the institutional arrangement of the national treasury and their desired institutional arrangement. My question would be to say, before you arrive at a permanent institutional banking, what attributes will the DR be looking at? And linked to that, will DR not consider in the future utilizing the current staff or personnel that is working on fire under the DDG, Dr. Guy, when the contract comes to an end? That, those are my three questions to the department. Now, working with fire, this new company, I just want to check if you succeeded as a company in unlocking opportunities in the third-party resources. Have you succeeded? If so, can you quantify that? And how does that translate into your members and your personnel? Now, you, in your report, you have indicated your extensive international deployment experience. But on page 12, around governance oversight, you say governance for managing international travel is not in place, but is being looked into as a matter of question. Your last assignment is the international one, the 31st May, 2016. Today is the 18th of October. It's almost a period of 6 months. Then, in terms
of where are you reading?
Page 12 from my document.
Of which there are two presentations.
No, the departmental one.
The departmental one.
Presentation.
Okay.
Now it's almost 6 months, and you are still looking into it as a matter of question. How? Urgent is this matter. And lastly, in terms of your transformation and your BEIC, your BE sketch, you are sketching your BE credentials and all this. I'll be interested in your procurement of your goods and services. Do you procure mostly of your apparel or whatever this kind of equipment that you are using and the instruments, tools, do you procure that from PE, or is it still the old pattern of procuring to well-established companies? Thanks, Chair. I take your guidance on Canada because I've read extensively on it. I was going to pose a lot of questions, but on the direction of the Chair, I'm comfortable that in the next encounter we'll be able to have this strategy. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And thanks to both the department and the issue. The Swahili which is working for what is for the greater good. I think that involves everybody together with the laborers or workers. No, sir, a few comments and questions, I think, because the colleagues have raised other issues. One is that, and I'll ask them, whichever way they go, whether they go into the department or to the private company, I think you will allocate that to yourself. But my first will be that somewhat I just have got a sense, although you have got footprints everywhere, except probably not so much in the Northern Cape, but I just have a sense that the program is biased towards the West End. It may be a perception, it may not be realistic. We have shown a flight that does talk to all the other provinces. I noted that Limpopo has the highest number of fires, highest number of persons. But somewhat in me, I've seen that the program is higher, probably towards the Western tribute. You can explain that, I think. Even in terms of the coverage, in terms of hectares, the number of hectares which spend, it's explained clear to me, but I'm just saying. The other, the department says you needed to try and have a realistic budget, and it was quite difficult to factor in what it will be, whether it will not be so low or too much, and so on. And I would have thought that perhaps you should have looked at the baseline in terms of the previous experience from draft, and whether that was not so realistic, the community gave that sense because there was no coherent program or whatever. But I would have thought that that needed to give you some. The second point will be that in terms of unlocking third-party resources, the question has been raised by Honorable Mabilo already, which I have. But what other conditions are there? Is it an open-ended, you raise these resources anywhere you like, from whomsoever, or there are particular conditions? You can raise these resources from particular sources, and not just anyone and everybody. Or can you go to some of these international syndicates and just raise resources, because they've got money and come to this thing, so long as you want to save lives. If you get what I'm trying to say, I have that additional condition. It's a pity perhaps in your own operations you might have talked to the department in terms of what are your targets generally in terms of everything else. I've not had the opportunity or privilege to go through that. But when you're talking transformation, in as much as you explained some of the things, but what are the actual targets? You may not respond to them here and now. Council can get that in writing to say these are our targets in terms of transformation. We want to achieve the following. This is how far we're from. Because it may be that yes, we boast about female firefighters, about black, colored, Indian, whatever, but not necessarily that that is closer to the targets that we want to achieve. What could be those particular targets? And lastly, sir, or perhaps last but one, I know that annually you have got a launch for the fire prison, just to create that awareness to the country, the public, to know that we are about this crime and some kind of work needs to be done. And mobilize everybody around that, which is good. But I'm just wondering whether, particularly now that we're talking that we must do more with less, because the country does not have resources, is it necessary to go all out, spend like that for all that yearly? Or because we are able to raise these funds elsewhere, that you are not so affected? And so, the very last chair, as I said, what is the mechanism? This issue, I'm just afraid, Chair, that I lose it with time. It does refer to the international experience, but also here at home. What is the mechanism around which you resolve labor disputes. For instance, I know this might not have been declared essential services. I'm not sure if it's declared as such, but I don't think so. But if you are in the emergency of this nature, where you must save lives and so on and so on, and you deploy firefighters, and there's a possibility of them striking and not do the work, it means people may die. If you get what I'm saying, persons, we can lose lives simply because there's a labor dispute, you know, and that will be very problematic. But surely, if Canadians, if I were to use that example, would have solicited assistance from South Africa, and we get there, and for whatever reason, we might have had a case, the firefighters might have had a case. Is there from the edge of them doing that work, they then strike, and lives are lost. I'm just giving an example. They can't be able to wait us. Surely, there must be an issue, even if it's that happens locally, domestically at all. Now, I'm saying, what is your mechanism? They may not, I'm not sure if they are unionized. I'm trying to understand what form of engagement is there. What is this mechanism that could avoid some
of these things can't be a good thing to happen when assistance. I don't want to deliver that venture. I take it in understood sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I
understand
exactly
your point.
It may take us to the Canadian experience, and I don't want us to get there. But generally, what is the mechanism to resolve labor disputes when they arise? I think that's the point. In terms of what happened there, I think we must still come back and engage on how, what were the efforts to try and resolve the disputes and all of those things. So I've got a list of questions myself too. The program is implemented under utilizing the principles of EPWP. Now, I just need to understand at what point does this principle apply? Because it's a private company that has been contracted by government to implement this program working on fire. And after that, after FFA, after FFA was appointed, then it changed to Gishiku, but Gishiku as a group has got some other activities, but there was a company working on fire that was then registered with a board, a management team, and all other people within that program. So I just want to find out, where does this principle apply? Does it apply only to the firefighters, or does it apply across? Remember, you have got the management team that is there. Is it also remunerated in terms of the principles of the EPWP? Or does these principles only apply to those who are supposed to, at the low level, which I notice is the bulk of it? I just need to understand that point, because I have got issues to raise in as far as that is concerned. And the second question for me is on the department's presentation, on the highlight or key indicator, it shows the expenditure is 1.092 billion. And I take it is an expenditure of working on fire program. Now, from the information that we received from the department, or this is two financial years.
Yeah.
They were a bit confusing to me because according to the report, 2014-15, there was a transfer of 382 million. Okay, it was adjusted to 461. I think it was increased during the adjustment. And then it's 461, 2015-16, 382, 2014-2015. So I just want to check it's better if you present this information, especially the financials, per financial year. Because if you put it over, if you club them together, it can create some confusion. But I just want to find out in terms of the percentage, because one of the responsibilities of the, in terms of the agreement, agency agreement, is that the company will also go out and get some funding, and then they also are entitled to get a percentage of that. So the figures that you have given us, what percentage of it is the transfers from the department and what percentage is the one that has been fundraised? And then all the institutional arrangements, the board members, what's the appointment process? Who appoints the board members? Of course, I appreciate that it's a private company, maybe following own processes, but there are two from the departments who are sitting in that board. So I just need to find out the process of appointing the board members and what would then be the responsibility of the members. If you check even the last slide here, which will be my last question, it's not my last, I still have got one more. There's environmental affairs, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, cooperative governance, water and sanitation. So what is the contribution of the other departments towards the program? Is there any allocation that is coming from those departments? Because we know from environment there's definitely something that is been allocated from the budget of the department that gets transferred there. And my last point, maybe I must leave the last point to get a report on the Canadian experience. But for now, I only have those four questions, which the department will help to respond to them, and Mr. Abrams, you can indicate who of your team that can help you to answer all the questions, or you'll take all of them yourself. So those are the questions. On that Canadian experience, I think let's agree that we'll then have a session where we'll get a detailed report, a detailed written report, and then we'll then have to engage with it. Not detailed as in the slide presentation. The narrative report must also come, and then with the slide presentation. So I wouldn't want you to answer any questions relating to that, because we'll have to engage again. Honorable Khadere, unfortunately after the chair has spoken, you know, protocol doesn't dictate that you must come the last. Unfortunately, we are a deputy chair. Okay. No, I will make an exception for now for you to ask to have the final bite as a candidate deputy chair.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm really sorry that I arrived late for the presentation. So I missed part of that was presented. But I would like to pose just one question, Chairperson. I did an oversight on working on fire in Utrecht and Matlangeni municipality. And what I found there was really eyesore. My question would be, how do they sort of like prescribe what needs to be on these fire stations, working on fire stations? What are the requirements that they need to meet each and every fire station so that you can call it a base for working on fire stations? Because what I saw, it was really disgusting. They were using the old service station that was previously used by, I don't know, by who. And the conditions were really, really eyesore in Madlangeni municipality, in KZN. Madlangeni, Utrecht municipality. It's Utrecht, it's called Madlangeni. So I would like to know, do you sort of like lay the basic, this is what you need to sort of like meet in order to be, to comply as a fire station, or you just, it's a free fall for all. Thank you.
Okay, very much. The deputy chair has said the last part. So let's hear the DJ.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take a few, and Dr. Preston, and then Krista will talk to the financials, because we have the figures there, and then we get Mr. Evans and the team to follow through. Just starting with Honorable Mabilo's questions, the lessons learned from the working on for water in relation to how we would run working on fire if we were to absorb it in the department, and what attributes would we be looking for. Honorable Mabilo, I think it's possible that we can take lessons from working for water. However, partly because if we focus on working for fire in respect of its role in ecosystem services, we can have proactive operations, because we know what the various vegetation types, when they require fire and so on, and we can plan that proactively. But we also have the reactive aspect, which is not quite fitting in respect of the working for water program, which is why institutional arrangements for working on fire would have to, at least its attributes, I would say, you need an efficient procurement system, not a procurement system that is going to have to wait for a submission that will go through to the DG when the fire is burning in Mpumalanga or elsewhere. So both logistically and also otherwise, we should be more efficient, which is, in my view, with my limited experience with this program, we would need to have the operations more under a government entity, a public entity. Because in essence, they can still adhere to the PFNA and pressure requirements, but also enable the delegations and the processes of making decisions to enable a quick responses. But again, we would still have to go through the motions in respect of how that can be achieved. We have to check the legal mandate of the department, which in the biodiversity legislation, we do have provisions, but we don't have provisions for setting up such an institutional arrangement as yet. We still have to amend the legislation. Secondly, in other in respect of absorbing staff, whichever the future entity, there are prescripts that we have to follow in respect of the DPSA regulations and treasury regulations. We can follow a process of matching and placing, or we may have to advertise and people then fit those positions that would be available. So we cannot prejudge that that process, but would have to adhere to the processes that are outlined in law in respect of DPSA and treasury. And then lastly, my other response was in relation to
You said that you can utilize the Biodiversity Act. Because my understanding is that this one, the almost like the enabling legislation is this one, the National Felt and Forest Fire Act.
That's a
draft legislation. Yes, which is the regulation which provides for the management of this wildfires.
Yes,
so that is the empowering sort of legislation. I don't know.
Not quite.
Yes, the fire, that's why we're saying the complexity in respect of the fire operations is that it services both in terms of ecosystems, biodiversity. In fire legislation, the Felt and Forest Fire Act is a forestry legislation. And it was anticipating that there would be fires that would cause challenges for commercial forestry. So it's not a biodiversity legislation per se, which is why we're saying if you are to consider our needs as environmental affairs in respect of fire are very much on the basis of ecosystem services, whilst we then have other needs for responses when we have fires in terms of disasters, which again is a legislation that is a responsibility of COPTA. Okay. Disaster management is a functional responsibility of COPTA. Forest Fire Act is a responsibility of DAF. Environmental affairs in respect of biodiversity and ecosystem.
So currently, what is the empowering act that
we're using? The Forest Fire, Forest Fire Act is the current legislation. Because remember, when we're saying the function was in water affairs, water and the forest was under water affairs at the time when the program started. So that's why, in essence, when we're
saying, you're saying that in future you have to look at amending the biodiversity. But currently, what you use now to establish this entity and to give it a mandate to do that on behalf of government is this one.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is. And in terms of institution, but even in Biodiversity Act, there are provisions that talk to ecosystem services, and I can't quote it now. I think I don't know which one it is. So there is an enabling provision in terms of providing fire responses for ecosystem services. But the more developed legislation in respect of fire management in the country is the forest fire legislation.
Okay. You know why I'm asking this question is that, remember, when we spend funds, there must be a justification for us to spend whatever funds. Something that empowers us to do that, which we are doing. So we are currently using this one to set up an entity, to give it a mandate, and to even give transfer funds to that. This is the legislation that we are using currently.
I'm not saying
where we are deriving the mandate to do what we are doing now.
We have the Biodiversity Act giving us the mandate. If I recall, Chair, the program, remember, environmental affairs was with water also last time. So we had the program under water and forestry, and then beyond that, it was then under the Ministry of Water and Environment. And when the functions were split, clearly it would give more meaning, or it would logically make sense to have a function under environmental affairs, because it has got a biodiversity benefit, or it responds to biodiversity demands. And the colleagues can also elaborate on that.
No, I'm with you. I agree.
Ecosystem services.
I am with you, but
okay.
I'm saying, ideally, because remember this thing has got a history, because the departments were together, and then this was the act which was established. But now it makes more sense for the function, according to what you say, to be in the environment, and that probably was the rationale that was used for this thing to be there. But the act that we are still using is this one, which is something that we must look at setting up processes probably to do that. Because we can't spend money without any empowering legislation. We can't set up systems and structures if we don't have the mandate to do that. And that's just my point. So we're still using this one. There's nothing illegal about it, but it has to be properly located, I think, going forward, which is an additional responsibility for the department to do within the 7-year period that this thing is running.
Exactly, Chair. Yes, I would agree with that. And that's those are the challenges, and that's why I'm saying that I was saying earlier on, the minister has already attempted to have a thought process on it, and as to what decision, because it's a policy decision on whether this function would now have to be located in environmental affairs, and therefore we must amend the Biodiversity Act to enable the entity that is required. So that's why I made that comment earlier on. Thank you, Chair. And then on the my next comment was on the honourable member asked the question about labour dispute mechanism. I would only talk to the essential services part, and I'm sure the Jacobs will be able to talk to the mechanisms that they use as an institution. Currently, the function is not. Is not declared as an essential service. For us to have it declared, we still have to follow the labour legislation, and the Minister of Labour will then have to make that determination. So I thought I should give that that response currently. And then, and lastly,
what is the generally the IFR? I know that this one is treated differently, but generally the firefighters are not part of essential service.
I don't know.
They are.
Structural fires, not
other.
Not other fires.
No, structural firefighters
are
essential services.
Yeah, but we then have command.
Yeah,
here.
No, we've got Felton Fire, Felton Forest Fire fighters.
Can you explain the difference? Structural
fire. Chair, thanks for the opportunity. The structural firefighters are trained to go into a building and fight a fire.
Okay.
Where our people aren't trained in to go into buildings. Buildings, a fire, you know, there's all sorts of fire things happening within buildings that doesn't help happen in the open in the open field. So
what do you refer to the other one?
We're talking about Felton Forest firefighters, wildland firefighters. The
not
international term,
yeah.
Yeah. The international term is wildland firefighters.
Right.
And then my last comment, Chair, on the questions that link to the department, which more link to me. What has the department done? I know that, Chair, you said that the report will have to still be presented on Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we note that the colleagues understood that we're only talking about the model for working on fire in terms of the program today.
Mm-hmm.
So the details will then be presented of that report. But in terms of what the department has done, again, the Honourable Mabuzo was talking about the fact that it's almost 6 months now. DELCO the MOU, we need a government to government. Because they are a private company, they are able...
Maybe we must have that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Because it speaks to that.
Okay.
And Honorable Mayudu will understand that.
All right.
I don't think you will have objection when you...
Okay. All right. No. I don't. I'll then leave it at home. And then lastly, yeah, I think that is all. I can't remember now. I'll hand over to Guy, and then I can come back to you if there's one of the comments that I needed to make. Guy?
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chair, and honourable members and colleagues. I'm just going to go through sequentially, but I'm going to deflect some of those questions to the official group that are more appropriate. So just in the order that we went, one woman on the board, obviously, if Kishuga could talk to that, please. There was a question related to that around the two dear staff members, Krista, Dr. Maria, and Global, who are on the board. That was part of the actual agreement that we stipulated that had to be the case. We wanted people to be on the board, but the rest of the board is chosen, so they will answer to the gender composition of the board. I think it's probably quite important to say that we as a department have the final say over the targets and what it is that needs to be done. So we through our oversight committee, we will look at all of those targets and make sure that we get what out of this what we require. And the Northern Cape...
The board members, are they remunerated like other board members?
Not our members, our staff members.
Okay.
No, they're not allowed to be.
So they just attend meeting, get stipends for attending or what?
No, I'll come back to that, Chase, because
okay.
You asked the question actually.
You want to just...
Can I please come back to
right.
The board member, the departmental representative in any board, you cannot be paid. If they book you a flight, maybe, but even in this case, they don't pay. We pay from the department in terms of, because it's always difficult to, on accountability, to account for what was paid by the entity versus what was paid by the department, and there can be abuse. I've had experience on that. So in the department, the practice is that we cover the cost of the departmental official. So if there is a name of Dr. Christo Marais paid for from Kishuku, we must know that there is a program.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
Or even a neighbor. No. So
yeah.
When you look at the financial statements, we look for them. We can look for their names. So that is definitely not allowed. Then the second part, Chair, which you asked about utilizing EPWP principles. The EPWP principles only apply to the staff, to the workers. But still, we still limit what goes into the different categories. So, for example, in our project overall, even working for programs, we have up to 15% management fees. In this case here, the management fees are put at a ceiling of 9.6%, not above 10%. So that is how we cap the expenditure. And then there are other expenditure items that are also defined on that basis. So that's how the principles are applied.
What is the issue? Because it's principles which apply only to the staff, not to the managers.
Mm-hmm.
The manager will get the normal salary that the manager gets, and this manager will be managing this group of people who are paid according to EPWP. So it's a bit problematic in a sense that the rest of the cohort of employees are treated differently than the blue collar, you see. It's a bit problematic, but I don't know how
the model exactly work, because if I'm a manager, I manage a group of people, I get paid according to the best, what the market can afford, and we're a group of managers there, and then we manage this lots of people who are receiving payments according to EPWP, but and you must also remember that at the end of the day, it's a private company that is handling this aspect. But it's something that we can talk about at some point, but it's a matter that is a little bit concerning to me, inherently as an activist. When I see something that is it doesn't look proper, I get worried. But I guess it's something that has been agreed to, which we may not do something much. As the problem that arose there, but we'll talk about it when we come.
So I think, Chair, on EPWP, because this is now the principles that apply across. So one of the opportunities that maybe we have, which Minister can take up, there is an IMC that's coordinated by the Deputy President, which firstly now has done a benchmark on salaries or wages that are paid to people or beneficiaries of EPWP versus the other people in other sectors, and whether EPWP is attracting people away from jobs, and also the other issues around accounting and so on. So maybe this is one of the areas that must be looked at going forward, because the current guideline is structured in the fashion that we are implementing it.
Okay.
So I hear the concern.
Fine. Let's go to another question.
Well, I just add on to that the 9.6% is the top of the percentage that they can get. It's actually a sliding scale downwards. So the more the budget, the lower the percentage is what the agreement is. So there is a contract that we do have. I think, you know, we have a lot of implementing agents across some private, some state entities, and indeed our own positions, myself as a DDG and the other staff, the 495 staff, we all paid at government levels in managing teams directly or managing implementing agents, depending on what people do. So what we work with all of the IAs, the implementing agents, is that there's a percentage management fee and they must pay for themselves out of that, and their salaries and all their other costs out of that amount. So whether we manage it or whether it's managed through an IA is a choice that we look at in terms of risk and function. But one way or another, there would be salaries that would be being paid. So then I think we need to look at at how we remunerate staff generally, and the management responsibility.
Let's get to the other point.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Northern
years, we have agreed that something else that we can always look at.
Sure.
Don't have to belabor the point.
The Northern Cape, we do have capacity in the Northern Cape, but it's management-wise, it's linked to the Free State because of management capacity, so you don't want to have too many managers for that. And well, the point is that historically the Northern Cape, except in a few areas, is not highly fire prone. You know, we've got all the records of fires, particularly recently. But we do find now with the invasive grasses that are moving into the Northern Cape that in fact we are facing more and more problems of fire in the Northern Cape, and we'll probably have to end up with a fully fledged capacity in the Northern Cape. But our 200 fire bases that we have across the country had been looked at in terms of a prioritization and in terms of risk, with the need for us to try to have capacity wherever it's needed. We need many more fire bases, but we also have to have partners who are willing, and there's been a comment that was made by the deputy chair around the quality of the from the non-deputy but of the quality though of the basis certainly varies, and it's one of the issues that that we continue to engage with Kishubu around how we can have the best quality, but quality not just in terms of the facilities, but the training and the deployment. We need people, these firefighters, to be working outside of the fire seasons, because there are many other things that they can do. They're well trained, and we use them, for example, to burn fire breaks, to burn stacks from invasives, to go up mountains and clear invasives, things which they're well trained to do, which other people are less trained to do. In fact, all of our high altitude work is managed through working on fire as well. The people who dangle down ropes to get to invasive species on the cliffs. So those are all factors as to where we set up our next bases. And we need many more bases. I mean, as excellent, if I may say so, as this program is, we are not covering as much as we need to do. And I think the perception that there's more in the Western Cape, part of that is that we have two basic fire seasons. One is in the southern parts of the country, which is predominantly Western Cape, but going into parts of the Eastern Cape. And the other is in the northern provinces. So that's part of the reason why we wanted to have one agency, was the ability to, instead of having different capacities, to move capacity from the north to the south as we need them. So in the fire season that we had 2 years ago, we had many firefighters coming down from the Free State, from Mpumalanga and elsewhere, to help fight the fires in the Western Cape, and suddenly the people go from the Western Cape to the others. But the actual figure is that we have about 700 firefighters in the Western Cape. And quite frankly, when you look at budgets, the fire season in the Western Cape is in the last months of the financial year. So December, but the real time of fire is in January, February, March. So there's a point where you actually start running out of budget. So in many cases, the fire is a problem in the Western Cape. Sorry, I've been instructed.
Yeah, I think they would like you to wrap up.
Yeah, I'm only on the first one.
Because you know, in your daily bread, you work with this.
I know, sorry, sir. You can go on and on.
That's a question.
Okay. The unlocking of resources, I'll ask Kishubu to reply to that as well. The transformation and targets, those are things that we set. They are not set by Kishubu. We set all of the targets that are met, and Working on Fire has been excellent. It is a different program from all of the others in two respects. One, the lower number of women, so 31%, it's a target of Johanna. Yeah, the general target that we have is 55% for our EPWP programs. We have 31%, we have steadily increased that. They really do make an effort to get to the figures. And again, I won't elaborate now, but I can elaborate on the various things that we're trying to do to get that figure higher and higher. But please remember, it's the highest in the world. The The United States, for example, is I think at 2% women in their firefighting capacity, is 31%. But the other one that's out of kilter is youth. So we have 94% youth. The target generally now is 65%. Youth being the definition of 16 now to 35, and so it's a far higher one, but it's the nature of the work because they people need to be fit. If you fail, and although it's not an essential service, if you fail your fitness test, you actually are dismissed. You have a chance to get to the level, but we cannot afford to have people who cannot save themselves in fires. And we've only had one person who's been killed in all these years actually fighting a fire, which is, again, remarkable in terms of the dangers that we do face. So all the transformation things we set, and they have consistently performed well in our view. What Dr. Murray does do is he compensates for the lower number of females by employing more females in some of his other programs, and indeed the Boyo Mbido as well in our other EPIP projects. And the issue of the launch and the spend, I would just like to say, I do see, although Christo manages this, I do see the figures, and I'm very, very conscious of not wasting money. Our money must be spent on the beneficiaries. And this is one implementing agent that is exemplary in the way that it uses money. I've seen the hotels that they stay in, and I know that they fly Kishudu. What's it there? What's your Eva?
Kaluva.
So they fly the cheap, all of the things, they do not waste money. In fact, the one time that I was complaining was saying you're spending too much money on protective clothing, and I got shot down with examples that, again, if I had time, I could tell you why they insisted on having high quality protective clothing, and they were right and I was wrong. With the issue of the launches that were there, the launch is also it's advertising of what it is that we're trying to do. It's also part of the building of the spirit of the team. And I know it's about the flying of an aircraft that was a specific thing that did occur. And we are looking at every angle of trying to keep our costs down, and especially now because our budgets have been cut. Working on fire's budget has been cut along with everyone else's budget, given the constraints that we do face. Okay, Krista will talk to the financials.
Chair, before that, I just want to make a point. It's a broad principle matter. I'm not isolating the Northern Cape, but I'm saying even if you are in any other province, the elucidation given is extremely thin and wholly inadequate. It can't be that there's no presence because of many issues. In fact, it will be an insult to the province or any other province. So I'm saying the department for fire must observe that this is a deficiency, an area that needs to be identified. It can be acceptable that the nation can. So I'm just making that comment, and I don't want to belabor this issue, but I was following up in terms of that.
Okay,
the matter must be remedied. We need a remedy.
Honorable Mabil, I think we can request that the solution to establishing a capacity in the Northern Cape so that they have got a footprint in all the provinces. The explanation that I had is that it's not prone to failed fires. You see, that was their main consideration. But he says that now it's beginning to be an indication that they need to establish that capacity. So perhaps what we should
recommend is that the department must look into creating some kind of capacity also in the Northern Cape. It may not be as exactly the same as areas where there is always fires, but that capacity has to be there. I think that would be our recommendation. You wanted to come in?
Thank you very much.
I'm not protecting them, Honorable Madiba. I'm just for the interest of time.
Chair, if I may from the stable be a bit critical, you correct. It's only basically the Kalahari north of the Orange River. And there are teams there. There is capacity there. We're only reporting it under Free State. But if you look at the... I take the Honourable Member's criticism. If you look at Northwest Province, Honourable, there's only 8 teams there. And there's a challenge with integrated felt and forest fire management in the Northwest Province, but we're working on it. DG, can I carry on to the financial? You asked, Honourable Chair, that what is the unlocking? Well, somebody asked about what other funds do we unlock, but before we get there, I just want to mention, I'm sitting with our 2015-16 key performance indicator report in front of me, and I just want to mention that media communications and marketing, this is now events and those kind of things, makes up only 0.42% of the budget. It's in total for the year, last year it was 2.5 million rand. With regards to just a quick overview.
So the figures that you are quoting, are they here?
No, they're not in that. I've opened the KPI, the Key Performance Indicator report for 2015-16, just to try and address some of the questions. It was specifically, I opened it specifically for the question of the unlocking of third-party resources. Before I go there, Chair, I just need to mention that the resources unlocked from the fire protection agencies or associations themselves, the FPA's fire protection associations are being established under the National Felt and Forest Fires Act. These fire protection agents or associations have got members who contribute to integrated felt and forest fire management, and then we go in and support them. And the unlocking of resources, I'll just give an idea. Last year, I'm at that age that I have to take off my glasses. The total program was, and I'm just going to round it off, Chair, is 598 million rand that was spent. 553 of that was the baseline of DEER. 30 million was for wage incentives as part of the EPWP. GEDART, Gauteng Department of Agricultural Rural Development, they've invested 2 million. And incidentally, that project won an award the other day. Dino King, 3.6 million. The Cradle of Humankind, 1.69 million. Madupi project, it's a collaborative project between Eskom, Marion Roberts, Basil Reed, and ourselves, the department, 1.8 million. Etiquini project, this is the municipality, 4.4 million. Sasol project, 992,000. So those are the external resources unpacked over and above the international.
What percentage is which of the total revenue?
The total expenditure was 598. The 598.
Sure, maybe it's better that we give you.
Let's get it in writing so that it becomes easier, you don't quote something that's not there.
No, it was just in response. I just opened it in response to your question because I need to find your question.
I also asked that question to say what percentage of the transfer of the department is reflective of the revenue or what you can call expenditure there. But don't respond to it now.
I'll have to calculate that to answer that one now.
I'm just saying the information is a little bit thin, to use the word of Babilu, that we get for us to understand, you see, the model. It would have been better if we received all the information, including the financial information. But we will still have time to get that kind of. You can proceed with another.
Chair, I think that was all that the DG. There's okay. Just one thing, DG, that I think we left out in terms of the mandate of the department. The Mountain Catchment Areas Act still resides under the department. It's an act that's not being used as it should have been used, or as it should be used in the country. There's about 11
catchment.
The Mountain Catchment Areas Act, and that act is driven by fire, because that's where nature and fire comes together. And it's in the fire, as the DG has mentioned, is one of the ecosystem processes. So we don't look at fire as a disaster management issue. We look at fire as part of how ecosystems, 60% of South Africa's ecosystems, as Dr. Preston has mentioned, are fire prone. In fact, it's fire driven. The fynbos in the Western Cape, 67% or 60% of the species will disappear if it doesn't get fire. So there's a very, very big interest for the department in sustaining biodiversity and ecosystem function, and the implications of ecosystem function on the siltation of dams, on the loss of water due to invasive alien plants, etc., etc. But I think that's a bit too much to squeeze that into reporting on just on working on fire.
We are going to get the last responses from Mr. Abbas, and the WIP and the other members are as follow-up. Do you want us to do follow-up?
No, fine, is just to say part of it. We wanted the conditions around which they are in this.
What conditions was
known that the world around which they raised this?
Okay.
They know that the department has failed, and forest management or fire management is primarily a responsibility of land users.
Mm.
Whether they are coming to the party or not, we are not just them. Yeah. But I just wanted to nothing be lost, whether they were to be responding or not.
Yeah. Let them include it in the later report. Eh? The follow-up also.
Thank you, Chair. I think part of that report must also give it clear about the mandate, because it's really not clear. What is just quoted is the also part of the Department of DAF. It's Ministry of Forestry again. So I've just looked at it now. It's not under DIA. Even your natural resource management is not under DIA as well. It's under DAF as well. So we need to get a clear mandate of why this part of this function is also resides in the Department of DIA. I'm not saying there is something wrong that you are doing. Something that is very good, but is it in the right department? That's what we need to determine on the next report that will come to the portfolio.
Yeah.
Because if you just quoted now, it's not, it doesn't fall within the responsibility of DIA. It's Department of Forestry again.
There are some of them by Social Order of Academy.
Yeah, it's 1978.
Which is, I don't think, are you done? Just switch off the light there, Order. I wouldn't want us to get too much into that. At some point, we may discuss it.
Mm.
But as we're saying, it's an issue that needs further development by the department as we move forward. Because remember, there was a period of a grey area where some of the responsibilities that came, but then the act was still sitting somewhere, and you can't take it away from there. You need to create something new, which is something that I think we've agreed that the DG will look at it with the minister.
Yes, Chair.
Even Honorable Khadeva says he doesn't say there's something wrong. Just that this thing needs to be done in a manner where
the mandate is very clear from the legislative point of view.
I think, Chair, we may have to come and have a full briefing on the legislation and the history of environmental sanctions. You may appreciate that before the National Environmental Management Act, environmental functions were split across a number of departments. They used to be under agriculture and parts of them under forestry departments. And there's been a whole overhaul of realigning legislation. The recent achievements were when we managed to realign environmental functions under the NPRDA to then get that legislative mandate falling under the Department of Environmental Affairs or under environmental legislation, while it can be executed by the Department of Mineral Resources. So there's been a whole process of rationalizing legislation, and partly also even with forestry. Right now they are busy updating their forest legislation, and we've had our minister and Minister of Dam have had extensive engagement. We have fisheries. Freshwater fisheries are still under environmental departments, not necessarily national, but provincial departments of environment. We need to make sure that we help provinces to repeal those pieces of legislation so that fisheries are only within DAF. So they feel a cleaning up of the whole legislative landscape, and I think we can brief you on that so that we are on the same page. Natural resources fully are an environmental function. What is in the agriculture, there is an aspect of what is referred to Agricultural Resources Act, because agriculture or production of crops happens on land and happens on soils, and there is a whole host of issues that relate to ecosystem services and management in that respect. So those functions, setting standards and norms, is an environmental function, but also how it is executed by other departments is what we then coordinate, which is why I think the minister previously in the committee had indicated that we may need joint sessions with certain committees like DAF committee and water and sanitation because of those aspects of our work. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much, DG. I think the context is well understood. I think we're well understood. The point is just let's move a little bit faster to tighten up the issue. We don't complain, just saying that let's have more clarity. So Mr. Abraham should be the last to respond to the question.
Thank you, Jay. I think we came here to talk on the model, and we appreciate the direction you've given on Canada. We will certainly provide the easy base.
I picked that one up. There might have been a misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Because we requested the model and the Canadian experience.
Okay.
So that was lost.
Lost
but it. I did speak to the DG. I thought she passed on the message.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that was that.
The program is quite large, and I think you know we tried to compress it. I mean, one thing I think we overlooked in bringing to the fore is that the way we operate on the ground is in partnership with bases. In other words, we don't go and set a tent up there and say here's a base. Okay, we need a partner who wants to host and manage a team in terms of agreed parts. Now, in terms of Honourable Adebe's question, if I may just address the issue, it's not good to hear that type of report. We have got an agreement, a partnership agreement that specifies what they need to do. We do audits from time to time, and we do have a challenge, particularly in smaller entities like small, poorer municipalities, or that the capacity to deliver what we see as the basic standards to that. But we will follow up on that one, certainly. But we need a partnership. So we do have, Honourable Mbilo, we do have teams in Northern Cape. It is dictated by the fire prone, the fire risk, and which partners are able to host us there. I think what was said and misstated is that in terms of managing it, we bring the statistics under Free State because it's the number teams are small.
Because if we look at our provinces, and just to address also Honourable Makubele's issue about Western Cape, Western Cape is not the largest province. In fact, the largest KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape in terms of numbers of that thing. So they're all about 700 plus, with the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu a bit more. In the case of Mpumalanga, you bet that 600, Limpopo, about just under 700 people that are firefighters which are in the province, and Northwest is about 423. So we obviously place people in terms of, one, the fire prone issue, you know, how much fires there are, and secondly, what dictates that the partners are willing to do. And Honourable, we have actually removed people from partners where we found they're just not responding to what we require them as minimum. And as DDG has said, we need our firefighters to also be active in the non-fire season. They cannot be lazing around, sitting down. So we need base partners who've got a program of action that's related to environmental management in that sense. Honourable Nyambi, in terms of what happens to the employees, I think was detailed early on, that you know, the exit plan is to return to government. Obviously, we cannot tell an employee you will go and join with it. But if they're unemployed and not, or you know, happy with employment, anticipation is the vast majority will in fact become part of the future institutional arrangements. There's nothing. In terms of third party resources, I think we've agreed to give the details thereof, but I think the question was, how do we go about it? Much of our third party resource unlocking it is related to our basic work, providing integrated fire management. Obviously, if we get a donation, you know, from a sponsor, from Sunlum, insurance company, that will go into the project. Because our basic objective in unlocking third-party resources is to expand the resources for the program. So the more we have, the more we can do. That's why you'll see on our figures on performance, we go over 100% because we have non-budget income that comes in. When we set the target, we can only set the target in terms of what the budget is. If we gain more resources, we perform better, if you like. Okay. In terms of Babilo, in terms of procurement, yes, we are governed in the contract in terms of at least better than level 4. Particularly the textiles is a level 2, so we are quite conscious of adhering to that. And as you saw from the BE score, we got 125% for procurement in terms of compliance. So it's pretty much part of our daily life. In terms of Western Cape, I think what's been indicated is that we've got two fire seasons. The glamorous fire season, in fact, the Parliament can see it burning on the mountain here, is in the summer. In fact, what is not seen, even in the Western Cape, how much fires happen out in the rural areas. This gets the publicity. In fact, last year, you know, when we had this huge fire on Table Mountain, at the same time, there were terrible fires burning right down the Southern Cape, right up to the northern part of the Western Cape here. You don't get the kind of publicity that we see. So during summer, you'll see the activities around here. But the largest part of the program is actually north. KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Free State, Northwest, and Gauteng. That happens in our winter, you know, and in fact, where we're sitting now is normally the worst month, you know, September, October, you know, when all that grass has been frozen and dry and catch the wind there. So it's a very balanced program. In fact, the Western Cape is relatively a small part of the issue. Just in terms of the launch plays a very important part of getting all the partners to buy in. It doesn't only happen in the Western Cape. So when we go to the fire season, so at the beginning of the fire season in the north, which is usually June, they have a launch in every province. Because that's where you get the resources together, you get people to make their commitments to act. So it's a very important mobilizing platform in terms of getting we have quite a well-developed HR department, both national. Every province has HR personnel. We have HR policies. So issues like disputes, discipline, grievances dealt with in terms of HR policy in terms of the normal norms, in terms of what's established in terms of that. Just with reference to ECWP, the conditions of our beneficiaries are determined by a ministerial determination, the Minister of Labour, number 4, 2012. And that defines who are participants. So the management cadre are never covered by the ministerial determination. Now, what the ministerial determination will also exclude certain provisions of the Basic Condition of Employment Act from those categories of people. When we come to HR people with university degrees, we cannot attract them on an EPWP stipend. They are not a target for voluntary. You know, they're employable. If we have finance, we cannot have finance manager, someone doesn't have finance qualifications. My colleague, the goodness there, you know, is almost a CA at the moment. So we have to have it managed by people who have done that, but also the ministerial determination distinguishes who is covered by EPWP and who is not. So that's the context that we operate on. In terms of the board, yes, I think the observation is very well noted. As we speak now, there are two black women who are being consulted with in terms of joining the board, fairly senior people, and we're quite mindful of that, trying to bring about those kind of changes that we think need to happen at that level.
How many boards have passed that?
Yeah.
And they're appointed by...
They are invited by Kishudu to join, it, with the exception of the DEA people who are determined in the contract. So that's already predetermined. And we invite people to join us in terms of strengthening the governance of the organization as well as the transformation.
So they are invited by the holding company?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I think, you know, as I said, take note of your proposal, I think it's welcome. We've got a lot of information to share on that.
Who's proposal?
Canada.
Oh, yeah. That's okay, the members were ready to engage on that.
Yeah.
So
I could shoot from there, but I think it would be better, as you say, with the report.
Yeah. When I asked that thing about Honorable Kekar. Just go out, yeah? Take it out. Yeah. Okay.
Just Chair, I think we want to also note the question on the conditions. We have not answered because we have not stipulated the conditions for the third party resources. And I think it's something we can come back to.
Yeah, and also part of that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's that. Probably when we engage, I'd ask about how much you get from other departments.
Part of the report
that is coming.
We said we'll give the financial indicators, both the department's contribution and what was the contribution last financial year, 2015,
okay,
and projected.
No, that will be good. That will be good. Okay, thank you very much. No, let's not. We'll engage by next time.
All right.
Okay, which?
No, I'm not sure if I'm engaged with them, I'm sure, but the question was, yeah, we probably.
No, my intention was to get one presentation before lunch.
Before one. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just the last thing, because they could clarify us, there are no slight numbers or pages, unfortunately, on your presentation. The one on the the province, the number of fires attended to by your teams per province. It is good outline, but just the accuracy of that firstly. Yes, this very one. The accuracy in terms of the source where you're getting this, whether from your teams or women, but I hear that you're saying these are what the ones attended to. So that the fires were more than this. There are those that you did not attend to. But it will be good to say per province, that's we had so many fires, so much hectares covered, we could not attend to. I'm not sure if you get what I'm saying, broadly than what they attended to, so that we have a proper
You must note it down for when we engage again.
Because now
we're going to open it. Another member is going to think of something and go back to another slide. So it's fine. Food for thought for the next engagement. I would really like us to close this one and say thank you very much, Isheku and the department. We had really thought that the message around you sharing with us the experience in Canada in a form of a detailed report you have received, because it would have been better just to deal with everyone, all the issues at once, and then we dispose of it. Now you have to come back again to hear, but it's fine. We will then receive a report. I think it's better to get a narrative report and a slide presentation before the meeting, so that members can just also go through it. Because there are two presentations. The first one we did receive last week from the department, but the other one, this one from Kishugu, we only received it this morning. And the practice is that send it before time so that we're able to go through it and then to prepare ourselves on what we need to ask the questions. So I guess even the next one will be the same. We'll expect that you send it beforehand and then we engage with it. And thank you very much for coming. We appreciate you coming here to speak to us and the department as well. Thank you very much for your presentation. We'll still have to engage with the lab. So I thought that maybe before we can break for lunch, we can just get one presentation before we then break for lunch. And then the ocean. Can you break for some few minutes, body break, and then come back? Maybe 2 minutes or so, and then come back.
Thank you. Thank you. Province competition, came in and the province.